Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From the Kia Studios in Midtown Atlanta, it is the Midday Show. Andy and Randy, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Willie P in for Andy alongside Randy McMichael. Hope you've been enjoying your Monday. It is noontime, which means it's time for the most important audio in the world. We're about 20 minutes away from a lunchtime Falcons report. We'll get back into the Falcons and tell you who is back at practice today. You'll be surprised, and pleasantly so, to know about that. But, again, the most important audio in the world, it is the Braxton Big Clip of the Day, brought to you by Braxton Automotive. For more information, go to BraxtonAutomotive.com. We spent a lot of the day talking about SEC Championship Saturday this weekend at Mercedes-Benz, LSU, and Georgia. Kirby Smart on the SEC Championship environment and what it'll mean to be playing in Atlanta for a second consecutive week.
The SEC Championship is the greatest environment maybe in all of football, okay? Because you can say the Super Bowl and you can say all this, but there is no greater passion for a game than any place in the country when you talk about LSU and the University of Georgia. It doesn't matter who's playing in the SEC Championship.
I don't mean to sound like Mr. Chamber of Commerce guy, Randy.
Okay.
But because people always kind of talk about, you know, do the conference championships mean anything? Should they go anywhere? I don't want them to go anywhere just because of this game and what this game means to this city and to college football in general.
It's a fun, it is an amazing atmosphere. It's an amazing game. And when you look at it, and it's for all of the conference championship games, you earn the right to be there.
Sure.
You know what I mean? They just don't, you know, I mean, I know the Big 12, they just recently went to and it was more or less, you know, who's the champion.
And I don't like that they did it. They did it under pressure.
Yeah.
Because they felt that they needed a 13th data point. But I almost feel like that hurts them, especially if you get a rematch.
Which they most likely will have.
And,
they have it this year.
They're going to have it. Well, I mean, they have it every year because it's a round robin.
Correct.
Because everybody plays everybody in that 10-team conference. And you have a rematch where the team that you probably has the best chance to get to the playoff is the team that lost. So if they lose again, what happens? You know, you end up shutting yourself out of the playoff.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, I mean, unless you are just dominant like Ohio State or LSU, that always happens, will it? Because, I mean, say, for instance, you're going into this game and Baylor has one loss and, say, Oklahoma is undefeated and Baylor beats Oklahoma. I mean that's the situation you'd be looking at because you're like, well, we put a team in over Baylor that they just beat in the conference championship. So, yeah, it hasn't hurt them as much because Oklahoma's been so damn good.
Right.
But eventually, I mean, it might happen this year.
Would you, and we talked about this a little bit, and we'll get into a little bit more of the Iron Bowl from this weekend in just a moment, but the Iron Bowl usually, over the course of the last couple of years, has always kind of determined the SEC West champion.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a little bit of a sheen off of the SEC championship because of the fact that it's not Alabama or Auburn being in it?
No, I don't think so.
I
don't think so. And the reason why is because LSU is still one of the top programs in the country. And I think because of the way they've looked this year, I mean, they're must-see TV. You know, we know that offense sell tickets. We know that the defense wins the championship, offense sell tickets and all that stuff. And they got a hell of an offense.
I just know how much those two schools usually bring to the table when it comes to people in this town.
They do. Oh, LSU going to be here. It's going to be plenty of purple and yellow, purple and gold, yellow, whatever it is. There's going to be plenty of that in Mercedes-Benz.
Especially given, though, how crazy that game was on Saturday. And this is how crazy it was on Saturday.
It'll be a 30-yard field goal to tie it for Alabama's Joseph Bulovas. This kick is on the way. It is up. And it hits the upright. My God, it hits the left upright.
Oh, my God.
You're going to write a letter. I'm sorry. I want to hear that. Dude.
48-45.
He's sitting at the left table by himself today.
Something about that stadium, though, by the way.
I told you strange things happen on the planes, man.
It's a dadgum mistake.
13, 17, and 19, they got victories over them.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's just something. It's strange down there, man. And, you know, we know how valuable that game is to both programs. Mm-hmm. And when you look at what Auburn did, and I know I don't know how many people outside of the Auburn fan base picked Auburn to win that football game, but you got hey, hats off, man. That is a big time win for them.
Go ahead. A lot of the people who don't watch a lot of college football said it's a good thing for college football that Alabama won't be in the playoff. I disagree with that.
I disagree with it too. But here, the thing with we were talking about this on our show, College Football Game Time, that we have here on Saturdays on 92.9 The Game. The committee was trying to find a reason not to put Alabama in. The committee is so happy that Alabama lost, because all the scenarios is like, okay, even if Utah wins, Alabama's still going to get. I mean, they did not want to have to explain why they were going to put Alabama in the top four. So now that's out the way, they can move on.
Which I don't like, because I still think if Alabama would have won with Mac Jones, what do you have from that perspective to keep them out?
Because it wasn't even we weren't even talking about them beating Auburn. We were talking about how bad would they need to beat Auburn. We weren't even thinking about the fact is that Auburn's a damn good football team, and this is usually a close game. We were just thinking about, hey, man, they got to beat them at least by 20 points to be considered. And I'm sure Auburn heard that, and they stood up.
I know, as a Georgia fan, you probably can't feel bad for Auburn. And a former Georgia player, you can't feel bad for Auburn.
I don't feel bad for nobody. You know, like I said, I'm not one of the people that wave the SEC flag. I don't care about that stuff. I care about my team.
I'm glad.
Yeah, I don't
I'm glad. I'm glad
yeah.
You don't.
Oh, you got to root for LSU because that thing doesn't know LSU. Well, I'm going to root for them. My team ain't in there.
I don't know if there's many better in the country. I want to see who they are. The way he played today, he was tough. He went down with a knee. He made plays with his feet. He made plays with his arm. He was competitively tough. He prepared like heck, made some big-time throws. I'm so proud of him.
That is Ryan Day, the head coach of Ohio State, on Justin Fields. Of course, continuing to talk about everything involving him and the Ohio State Buckeyes after their just dismantling of Michigan. It's gotten to a point now, Randy, where I think we're just kind of now finally waiting for Ohio State to play somebody with a pulse.
Yeah.
And again, I know we talk about this a lot with Clemson, but I'm wondering, is the Big Ten really worth its salt right now?
That's a great question. I mean, but you look at the names of the programs that are in the Big Ten.
Names only mean so much.
But I'm saying that's what the people look at. You look at Penn State and Michigan and Wisconsin, these teams. Ohio State just blowing past everybody, mm-hmm. man. And I'm talking about they're doing it convincingly. Justin Fields, unbelievable game he had. Especially, I was hoping that nothing bad happened to him when he got that guy fell on his knee.
Right.
Puts on a brace, comes back, and just throws a straight dime the next play. I mean, the kid is unbelievable. J.K. Dobbins, I mean, we talked about him in the Windy's on the Ticket Show. They had to do something because he was just running wild on him.
31 carries, 211 yards, and 4 touchdowns. You think Michigan can't stop the run?
No, they can't stop the run.
And the other part of this, too, I hate where people try to make your conference kind of be an identifier at large. Again, like you mentioned, the fact that, you know, these programs with these names, all those names are based off of something that happened 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's a lot of good football teams in the Big Ten. I'm just saying.
I think the one elite team is Ohio State. I think Penn State's a very good football team. Minnesota, they showed you that they can play with the big boys. But, unfortunately, they caught Wisconsin and weren't able to get the job done.
And I'm not saying that they're the ACC. But very similarly to Dabo Sweeney, it's not Ryan Day's job to curry favor for everybody else.
Yeah, it's not. And I just asked Brian, the line is 16.5 with Ohio State, Wisconsin. That sounds about right.
I think that tells you more about Wisconsin than it does about Ohio
State.
But
you know what? On Saturday we were talking about is Willie P. Like, if LSU, when LSU loses to Georgia, they're still going to be in.
Yeah.
Ohio State in the same boat.
Right.
Is it a preparation gap? Is it a coaching gap? What is the biggest difference between you and Ohio State at this point?
I mean, I'll answer your questions, not your insults, so.
That wasn't an insult. I mean, you've given 118 points in 2 years.
They played really good. They played good.
100 yards. That's what I'm asking. What's the biggest difference in the gap between you guys?
They played better today.
Here's the gap. It's talent.
Yeah.
Ohio State has talent, and Michigan doesn't. That's the answer to that question.
Yeah. Was that Timmy Tube Sock right there, Brian? Kind of. No. I mean, The thing with Jim is that people don't like him because of how he came in. You know what I'm saying? How he came to Michigan and everything with all the bravado and everything. And people like to see him lose. But you're 0-5 against your biggest rival. And most coaches, if you're 0-5 against your biggest rival, you lose your job.
My problem with getting rid of him is twofold. Number one, if that guy can't do it, who can?
That's true.
And number two, it's like, if you fire that guy, who is basically, you know, Michigan to the core,
right?
Who wants that? Who wants that challenge? After that guy,
it's a Michigan job. I mean, Michigan is a premier job in the nation. That's my thing. I'm like, when you're at a situation, and I look at like Scott Frost, I look at Kirby the same way.
Yes.
I look at guys like that who are alums of the school.
Doesn't always work.
If it doesn't work, but I'm saying, do you fire them or are you like, hey man, we need you to resign, we mutually decide to part ways type thing? Mm. That could be coming for Jim Harbaugh sooner than later.
Or they could be calling up NFL squads and being like, hey,
y'all want to
do. Do you think his next job is an NFL job?
I do. Hopefully it's in Atlanta.
Really?
Yeah.
Breaking dot dot?
Oh, no. I said this maybe a month ago. I was like, why wouldn't you go get him? I mean, he just can't beat Ohio State, but you saw what he was able to do in the NFL. Like, that San Fran team was... it was all right, and he was able to take them to the Super Bowl.
What do you think is his biggest barrier at Michigan?
That's a good question.
Is it the recruiting?
No, man, it's Michigan. No. I don't think it's.
If it's not the recruiting, then why isn't he able to beat him?
Because it's Ohio State. That's what I'm saying. His biggest hurdle at Michigan is Ohio State.
Crazy as this is, I mean, I would say it's a long shot, but we're not out of it. We do have four, of our division opponents coming up, and the guys got to understand that, and it's my job to make sure they do understand that we're still fighting and coming to work this week and ready to go and try to figure this thing out. But I've got to give them and show them that exactly, where we are and what we need to do, with these next four games.
At 5-7, the Philadelphia Eagles still have a chance. Especially with a head-to-head game remaining with Dallas to make the postseason, but man, that is a garbage division.
It is bad. And but the thing, the Eagles, and shout out to my damn Dolphins. But the Eagles,
your Dolphins, took care of business.
The Eagles, I don't know what they are as far as their identity, man. And the Doug Peterson, you can't luck your way to a Super Bowl, but is he at a point where, he ain't the guy? Is he like, because everybody was loving Doug, and now he's a genius and all this. What about, and I said this, Willie P, when they went to the Super Bowl and everything, and you see Nick Foles falling off. Nick Foles is exactly what I told y'all how he was. But remember that they had him, they had Frank Reich, they had the perfect quarterback, offensive coordinator, head coach type, threesome, and they lost it. They haven't been the same since. Carson Wentz. Is he better than Dak? I think Dak's better than Carson. Now, talent-wise, I think Carson has more talent and more gifts as a quarterback than Dak, but Dak has played better than Carson.
I'm not a big Carson Wentz guy.
A lot of people aren't. A lot of people, and you hear a lot of things coming out of that locker room about him. And
I'm just not very impressed by him. Is that a bad thing to say?
No, it's not because a lot of people look at him like that. It's like
I just look at him and I'm just like, he's just a guy. I don't think
he's talented, but I mean, and then are you going to tell me that losing Deshaun Jackson is like has that kind of effect on the whole team? Maybe it's coaching. I don't know.
The other part of this that I don't like is that there's going to be a team, whether it's the 49ers or Seattle, that's going to have to go on the road to face one of those NFC East teams. The top wild card team's got to face that team on the road, which I don't find.
They better hope it's not Seattle, or it might be Seattle.
Might be Seattle. Might be
49ers.
Might be Vikings. One of those.
The Niners. That's a big game tonight. Matter of fact, because I think if Seattle wins, isn't Seattle like number one seed because they beat San Fran head to head?
They have the head to head tiebreak.
A lot of their guys got confidence. Obviously, he made a ton of shots. He got to the foul line. It's kind of who James is, and it was amplified tonight. But I feel bad for our guys because I thought we had been playing really good basketball. You miss out on an opportunity last night. You miss out on an opportunity against Milwaukee the game before. You come here and you run into a tough situation.
That's the head coach of the Hawks, Lloyd Pierce, after the road trip in Houston came to a screeching halt, 10th consecutive loss for Atlanta. They are back in action tonight. taking on the Golden State Warriors, who are a walking wounded themselves, much like the Hawks. Possible chance for them to maybe get some momentum with a couple home games.
I know. Well, remember last year when you couldn't find tickets to this game?
Yeah.
Can't even give them away now. Nobody wants them. Hey, man, maybe being home is, I mean.
Could be a recipe for something good.
Let's hope so, man. Because the one thing I would say about losing, Will, especially when you're in a losing streak, just get one win.
It gets contagious.
Just get you one win. That's it.
It's kind of the way the Falcons were, you know, the way that Saints win. Look, I mean, that was momentum, baby. And you know, momentum is a hell of a thing to say.
It is.
And he also says there's no momentum like momentum. HD is going to join us about
getting folks fired.
He's going to join us about an hour and a half from now on a Falcons Monday, which is brought to you by Xfinity. It's beyond Wi-Fi. This is XFi. Only from Xfinity. Get the speed, coverage, and control you need with Xfinity XFi. We'll also get some more Falcons news next with a lunchtime Falcons report and tell you who is back at practice today for the Falcons, which will make you pleasantly surprised. It is the Midday Show. Andy and Randy, Willie P. in for Andy on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We're definitely disappointed with the outcome. I thought on a couple occasions, you know, there was some warrior mentality on a couple of guys, Grady Jarrett and Ridley, to name just a few. But I thought tonight the difference certainly came down to the turnover margin and pass rush. You
know? That is the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, Dan Quinn. We'll get back into the college football chit-chat with DJ Shockley, who will join us to get you ready for the SEC Championship less than 20 minutes from now. But it's now time for the lunchtime Falcons report on a Falcons Monday, brought to you by Xfinity. This is Beyond Wi-Fi. It's XFi, only from Xfinity. At Xfinity, get the speed, coverage, and control you need with Xfinity XFi. Midday Show, Andy and Randy, Willie P. in for Andy. Some good news for the Falcons as they get a little extra practice today. They will get Chris Lindstrom back on the practice field today for the first time since week one.
Yeah, I mean, that's big, man. You want to see it because, I mean, that pick was really unexpected. So, you know, number 14 overall, you spend it on a guard when you feel like you have somebody on your knees, but you still wanted to see him play. And he gets hurt in the first half of the first game, and you haven't seen him. And it's funny because the O-line has struggled all year, and you're thinking, well, if we had our first-round guy, it might be a little bit better.
Austin Hooper also back in practice. He missed the last three games with a sprained MCL. Still no sign yet of Julio Jones at practice, so that part of it is a little bit perplexing. And the one thing also John Wetzel's back on is the 53rd man on the roster at offensive line. And the thing about Lindstrom, I wonder if he can show some aptitude, if he can show that he can grasp everything right back in it, because you'll have to get him back up to speed. I don't know if it's a situation where you have him back at practice and you have him ready to play against Carolina. I almost wonder if this is getting him ready for that San Francisco game and have him get through a full week of practice just to make sure he can kind of withstand some things.
That could be it. I mean, they designated him today. Also, Matt Bosch was added back to the active roster also as the punter. You want to get him out there as soon as possible, Will. And the thing with it is that you don't want to rush him back, though. That's only because he hasn't played at all this year. You know?
Right.
I mean, a half, you can't justify anything by a half. And then he's going up, and then he's going to play on the same side as another young rookie, his counterpart. I mean, his compadre of the first round, and Caleb McGarrity. And we know how he's been struggling. So you're going to bring him in and put him over there. It's going to be tough sledding, but I think people want to see this. I know some people are saying, well, why don't you just shut him down for the rest of the year? Well, I mean, you got to somehow validate that.
Yeah, you got to see what you have. Pick
and see what you have. Just in case Mr. Blank's like, well, I might give it one more year, even though I don't think he will. But at the same time, you need to see this young man on the field.
Do you switch sides, perhaps, with him? Maybe put him on the left side?
No, I'll leave him at right because that's where he's comfortable at right now. I mean, and then you go into the offseason to decide what to do after that. If you're going to move him or move Caleb McGarrity. I mean, you got so many issues. Or not issues, so many thoughts that you can have this offseason with the offensive line, but the first thing is going to be who's going to be making those decisions.
Was it too ambitious to think, and again, we'll never get a full read because we didn't really get a full season with those two guys. Was it too ambitious to rebuild the O-line with two rookies on the same side?
Yeah, that's a good question. No, I don't think so. I mean, but now it's easy at the time. I didn't think it was, but now that you can see it, because I always thought that, you know, my philosophy is you're the first, second, third, or fourth round pick. You should be starting day one. That's mm-hmm. That's just what I believe in.
You're not wrong.
But the thing about it is that tackle spot is a different animal. And we know the one thing about Chris Lindstrom coming out of the draft was he had a hard time dealing with speed rush. Now, once he get his hands on you, once he put them jumper capers on you, you ain't going nowhere.
Right.
But that's just the part. You got to get your hands on him. And you've seen that he's had a hard time with using his hands.
And the other part of this, too, is I think that you have to worry about footwork with him because of the injury. And also you have to worry about whether or not the guy next to you is able to hold his block.
Correct.
And that's the biggest part. You know, Cameron Jordan was able to get him three times in the game against New Orleans. He got four sacks overall in the game, nine sacks of Matt Ryan in that game, which is the second most in Falcons history. McGarry, we talked about it earlier, gave you the stat, 11 sacks allowed, most in the National Football League, 11 times with quarterback hits. That's second most in the National Football League among tackles.
You can't be that guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I know he's learning on a job and he's a rookie and all that. Get that. You can't even let your quarterback get blasted. I'm looking at that number again. 11 damn sacks.
Mm-hmm.
That's bad. But not one guy.
But here's the other part of this. And again, we talked about this earlier. I think a lot of that also comes down to scheme. Like, how do you keep beating your head against the wall running these seven-step drops and not trying to do something to throw off the timing of the pass rush?
And 11 of them, sometimes Matt might hold the ball too long. It could be a coverage sack or not. But 11
sacks. I'm not saying he's not blameless.
Oh, but I'm just saying, 11 sacks by your name as a tackle, that ain't good.
No.
That kind of means you shouldn't be out there playing because you're going to get somebody damn killed.
Right.
You know, but yeah, I mean, you're so correct when you talk about shortening up Matt's drops, getting the ball out of his hands. A lot of that, if you can run the ball, that helps because we know the thing about when you can run the football, that slows down. You saw Baltimore was able to slow down the pass rush of San Francisco because they were able to run the ball so effectively.
And the other part, you mentioned the run game, but I also think, too, because of that, they've become rather predictable when it comes to the offense. And, you know, the fact that they've had to basically throw from behind so many times this season, I think has made teams completely key in on what they aren't able to do and really focus in on, okay, we're going to send four, we're going to send five, we're going to blitz up the middle, we're going to do these things and really get these guys off schedule.
Well, I mean, that's what, if you listen to Matt in the clip that we played come back, he said the exact same thing you just said. When Cam Jordan, as good as he is, when he knows that this is going to pass, I'm coming to get it. And that's all you. That's how you. Offensive linemen are not like going backwards. They all of them want to go for it. If an offensive lineman can run the ball, if a team can run the ball the whole game, the offensive line run because they're going forward. They don't like sitting back mm-hmm. and getting attacked like that. And when you know that defensive end know that you got to pass, that makes it even harder.
One of the biggest questions we were asking about the Falcons after the 2-game win streak. Was about the defense and how they had come into its own, especially because of the fact that, you know, they were covering better and they were getting more pass rush. And we were kind of asking the chicken and egg question, you know, what is helping more? Is it the defensive pass rush helping the covering, or is it the covering helping the pass rush? I don't know what the answer to that is, but I think you can tell over the last 2 games, the fact that they have not gotten the pass rush has led to the fact that these guys just once again have relapsed to the 6-game losing streak and the fact that they're not covering guys and guys are getting wide open.
Yeah, they're getting open. But and we know that the back end works with the front end. I mean, that's just how it goes in football. And you got to find a way to pressure the passer. On the defensive side, and I'm talking about the secondary, you've got to be able to disrupt. You've got to make the quarterback not – when that back foot hits, it can't come out. Let them pause for a second. Let them do a couple of those little bounces they do in the pocket. Because if they're just hitting their back step and they're throwing the ball and making completions, it's going to be a long day for you. I know a lot of people, we talk about why did they switch the defense up when they played against Tampa. I was curious about it too. Why would you go zone? I mean, Jameis can run the football, but he ain't a running quarterback. So if that's the reason why, so you can have all eyes on Jameis, I think that's a mistake. But I understand the concept behind what they were doing. If you look at that game Thursday, they outgained, possessed. But I think the Saints had over 100 yards of penalties. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a game that they should have won. But it don't
especially
matter.
Especially given the fact that you were able to get two extra possessions.
Exactly. But that's all for naught if you can't protect your quarterback. And Matt didn't play his best game either with those two turnovers. But, I mean, you weren't able to do anything against the Saints. Nothing at all.
The other part of this that obviously a lot of people are going to be asking is, you know, for 2020 – what is the greatest need? I feel like you can't answer one question without leaving a gaping hole on the other side, which is, you know, do you address the pass rush or do you once again try to fortify the offensive line? There's just a lot that's there that you don't have.
I think you got to go D-line.
You have to.
Yeah, I think you got to go. You got to go D-line, and here's why: because as much as we're talking about McGarity and all that, you got three spots that are pretty much locked in for this year: left tackle, right tackle, right guard. Don't know what Alex Mack is going to do, and then you got to go find a guard. I mean, you can find a Levitre, or you can bring back Jamon Brown. One of them two is coming back: Jamon Brown or Carpenter. One of them is coming back, or both of them, because they're both
having Jamon Brown, the human holding penalty.
Yeah, I mean, they're both coming back. So
that's
the
thing. At least he's not getting the quarterback killed.
He holding him.
That's fine.
As long as they're probably bringing back Wes Schweitzer too.
Wes Schweitzer's got, he's got pictures of somebody.
Somebody. Hey, Falcon fans, tune in to 92 of the game 2 hours before every Falcons game for the Bud Light countdown to kickoff. Harry Douglas and Paul Crane will preview the Falcons upcoming matchup. Countdown to kickoff is brought to you by Bud Light, brewed for the Dirty Birds.
I can't get on my guy Wes like that, can I? It's a little much.
Oh no, he's horrible. I mean, they ain't really getting on them. That's just bad.
That is Randy McMichael. I'm Will Palachik in for Andy Bunker. The Midday Show, Andy and Randy. DJ Shockley comes your way next. We'll ask DJ what his biggest concern about LSU is from a Georgia perspective heading into this weekend's SEC championship here in Atlanta at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Sports Radio 929 The Game.
I'll address the George Pickens situation. He was suspended for the first half for a violation of team rules, and that's all I'm going to say about that. And then, unfortunately, he got an undisciplined penalty. And when you make undisciplined decisions, regardless of what's done first, you pay a penalty for that. So he won't be able to play the first half of next week. And when you make emotional decisions, that's what happens.
It is the Midday Show, Andy and Randy, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Willie P. in for Andy alongside Randy McMichael as we now get a chance to talk a little bit about the Dogs getting ready to take on LSU in the SEC Championship game in Atlanta. Our pal DJ Shockley joins us from ESPN and the SEC Network. What's up, Shock?
Will, Randy, Mac, what's the deal?
Not. We are just chilling. We're ready for this game, which it seems like we've been waiting for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah.
I do want to start you off with the clip we had coming back from break, because I know that you also had an incident in the game that you did with Vanderbilt in Tennessee with Juwan Jennings. We're seeing a lot of these kind of pop up, not just in college, but the National Football League. Guys are getting a little crazy out here, DJ.
Crazy is an understatement. I mean, the one I had in my game, I thought was one of the most ridiculous things I've seen in a long time. And obviously, there's been a lot of different things that have happened around college football, like you mentioned, NFL, that's been kind of ridiculous. And then, when I made the statement and it was put out everywhere and all that kind of stuff, I was just surprised by that, man. So what? But I thought it was something that needed to be pointed out. And then, I guess they thought because I went to the University of Georgia that would change my mindset on what George Pickens did. And I said, absolutely not. He was wrong. Just like Kirby said, he made a very bad decision, and that doesn't change the fact that he went out and did something emotional. He did something that hurt his team, and he's in a spot where that team needs him. And in that moment, he was selfish. And it's kind of a similar thing I thought about with Juwan Jennings. Neither one were situations that you look at and say, maybe this guy was thinking something else or whatever it may be, it was wrong. And I think the consequences were well-deserved for George Pickens. I mean, you just can't do that in that kind of moment.
And Shock, I agree with you on a lot of what you just said. I want to go back to last week when we were talking about the receivers and Jake Fromm, and I believed in what you said, but I didn't want to believe what you said. And I kind of saw that on Saturday when we talk about the trust that Jake Fromm has with these receivers. It's becoming so obvious, and it's something that we joke about early. Me and Will were joking about earlier in the show. It's like, well, you got a week to figure it out, because I mean, it just looked like his hesitation to throw to some of these guys. It was so obvious.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that over the past probably month and a half, you've seen really show his head and really kind of look at it in a poor sight. And, I mean, you look at the way they started that ball game, going 0-4, starting the ball game, finally things started to click. But there is a definite hesitation in Jake Fromm. And like we talked about last week, I can completely understand it. Because of what happened early in the year versus South Carolina, you don't want that to be the reason why you lose a ball game. because you turned the football over. At the end of the day, people are going to say Jake Fromm threw interceptions. He threw it to the wrong spot. But there are a lot of things that go into the timing of routes. And, Randy, you know it as good as anybody. If a quarterback expects you to come out of a route at a certain spot, a certain depth, a certain time, and you don't do it, that makes him a little apprehensive about throwing the football a long time. And in this ball game versus LSU, it's going to be paramount that he throws the football on time and trusts his receivers because they're going to get happy as well. They're going to try to rush the pass. They're going to watch everything that's happened the last three or four games, and they're going to man up on the outside. They're going to put their hands in the receivers, and now not having Cager, not having Pickens, two big, deep threats, big body guys, that's going to be even worse because they know exactly who you are and what you want to do. And if it comes to an end of the ball game where he has to trust it to throw it and see it before it comes open, I'm just not sure Nick is ready to pull the trigger on that just yet, simply because of they're still not there as a unit and him trusting and throwing it.
Talking to DJ Shockley on the WaitForIt.com hotline, ESPN and SEC college football analyst. You can find him online at DJ Shockley 3 on Twitter. DJ, I know that the easy answer to this question would be just the LSU offense in general, but what specifically would be your biggest concern from the Dogs' perspective when looking at the Bayou Bengals this weekend?
Oh, man. I mean, you know, I've had a chance to watch LSU all year, had a chance to call that game, and I think the biggest issue that teams have is Joe Burrow doesn't lock in on one particular guy. This guy distributes the football to everybody on that offense. And what's been so different this year is, yeah, Chase, Jefferson, all those guys have gotten off on the outside, but now they've added that he's off to it. He's a big part of their offense. He's a matchup issue. We know what Georgia has done against tight ends over the past couple of years. He will be a big part of it. But I think the biggest part of this ball game will be number 22, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. This guy has done it in the run game. He has balance on. He can catch out the backfield. He's a matchup player. They put him out of space. He runs all type of runs, an option gun. I mean, he crushed Texas A&M last week. All he did was, you know, run four verticals and run guys off. He won an option run versus linebacker, and he won it every single time. He will be, I think, the determining factor in this ball game. Georgia's been really good against the run, but they have to account for this guy in the pass game as well. So between him and Thaddeus Moss, I think they're going to be big answers for Georgia. As we know on the outside what they're going to do, those guys are going to get their catches. They got to limit those guys when they catch it. Because their yards of catch is ridiculous, too. But Elam and Thaddeus Moss are going to be a big part of what Joe Burrow and offense wants to do to try to set up some different matchups against Georgia.
Shock, what was your impression of the Iron Bowl? I mean, we always say it's strange things happen down there in Auburn. And,
yeah.
I mean, again, Alabama and their kicking situation, it comes back to bite them again.
Yeah, it's unreal that a place like Alabama and amount of success they've had, that they continue to have issues in the kicking game. And it's stuff that, you know, you wonder why you go out and, you know, try to get these five-star kickers or you try to give them scholarships because they're far in between. And we see how good Rico is and how much of a luxury it is to have a guy that you can depend on. Alabama hasn't had that. I mean, I thought the Iron Bowl was fun to watch. It was obviously the two teams battling it out, and we know in rivalry games anything can happen. And talking about Alabama crush Auburn, and it just wasn't a defensive affair. A lot of points being scored, but ultimately, I thought the two pick sixes, those mattered. Mac Jones played lights out though. I mean, he gave him a chance to win. I don't think not having Tua was as big of a deal because they still were able to put up 45 points. And you think if you put up 45 points versus Auburn, you should win the ball game, and you don't do it. So a really, really great game. But like you just mentioned, not having a kicking game, special teams is that third phase that people forget about, that you don't think about until you have an instance like that in the end of the game.
DJ, going into the weekend, we had one opening in the SEC. Coming out of the weekend, we now have three, as Ole Miss and Missouri have now added to Arkansas of the three SEC job openings. At the end of the day, which place do you think makes the best hire, and who might you think that be?
That's tough to say, man, because I had a chance to do Missouri game this year, had a chance to sit down with Barry Odom, had a chance to sit down with Matt Luke as well. And I think Ole Miss is set up in the right spot. I thought that it was kind of premature because this was the first time that Ole Miss had the bowl ban lifted and starting to get scholarship back. They had a bunch of young guys play this year. You're talking about Plumlee and Ely are two guys on the offensive side who are really good for Ole Miss this year. And talking with Ole Miss, you just felt as though they were on the rise. They were going to get in the right direction where they can recruit, at least compete. And I thought they pulled the trigger on that a little bit too fast. It's tough to say who goes to school because it definitely depends on the personnel that they have there. Similar to what Chad Morris took over in Arkansas, it was not the personnel that he had designed for his offense and he suffered for it. And it's going to take whoever comes in a year or two to try to bring a recruit class in that works. And I've always said when you try to have a guy in those positions at that point in time, it sets you back at least 3 years because you have to have a recruiting cycle that comes around. Then you got to get your guys in there. Girls, the people at the top, give those guys a chance to turn that thing around. And I don't think they did that in either case. So it's tough to say who would come to any of those schools at this point. But I really was disappointed and really kind of sad to see Matt, Luke, and Barry Odom get fired.
DJ Shockley, hope to see those guys get the dub this weekend at the Benz.
Appreciate you, fam.
All right, man. Y'all be good. Appreciate y'all.
That is DJ Shockley joining us, ESPN and SEC analyst on the WadeFord.com hotline here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Don't forget our AMA 140. You can text into the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. Will has it up right now. So make sure y'all do that, 404-741-0929 or at Wendy Radio because Wendy will be reading the questions for us.
Certainly so. Very much looking forward to those Ask Me Anything questions. We'll get back into the Falcons. Harry Douglas will join us a half hour from now on the Falcons pre- and post-game show. We'll get you back in to see what's trending, not just what's going on with the Falcons, also the Dogs and the National Football League as we continue on the Midday Show. Andy and Randy, Willie P in for Andy on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.